hearts. Sharp swords with handle art to spar trolls and charge tolls to cross roads. Where bandits are catacombs and giant doors. Protect the chest and store some legendary items with the dragon bones and iron.
It's horse. A grand theft of Elder Scrolls. Simon's quest with Toe and Earl. Rocket shoes to Everclue. Easter eggs and gaming news. The POTUS need some bad dudes to crash your crew like Bandicoot. All shit a gaming and glitch control issues. Control issues.
Yes, y'all.
Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is A-Dub. You can find us at control-issues.com. That dash is a hyphen. Type it. Go on Spotify. Give us some spins. Look for us wherever you find podcasts, because we're probably there waiting for you. Head on over to twitch.tv/controlissuespod, where we put up gameplay videos for your viewing pleasure. We're also all Blue Sky. Control Issues Pod is the name. It's also the email address at the Gmail. Worldwide AM. Yeah, controlissuespod@gmail.com. You'll want to get down with that. You know, drop us a line. Let us know how you feel. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you're playing. But AMC, how you living?
Living well, A-Dub. Back-to-back-to-back weeks. That consistency is strong right now. I'm liking it.
Those gains.
Yeah. It's nice, too. Like, we're in the knee-deep in fall, so it seems like there's just new games constantly coming out. So it's kind of nice to just check in and see what's going on in the world of gaming at such a great frequency. But as far as myself, I've been good. Just same old, same old. Watching Demon Slayer Swordsmith arc still, enjoying that, getting in my workouts. And this week has been like a little rough, just a heavy workload, a lot of sports, which affects my work. And so just my workload has been just kind of crazy. And then on top of that, like unexpectedly somebody is leaving. And so that means we're going to have to go through this hiring process, and then I'm going to personally have to train the new person. So it seems like the next couple of weeks are going to be pretty busy. And so I have not been looking forward to that, but it is what it is. I am reading this book called The Small and Mighty, and it's helping me get through it. It focuses on like trailblazers in American history, kind of around like the 1850s period to like up to at least where I'm at, like around the 1920s, with like a focus on like women. And as you're reading it, like you're just seeing people just deal with like the harshest of situations. Yeah. And it does make like when I'm complaining about work, it's like, you know what, like this lady freaking raised her daughter in a shed and started a school from the shed. And then next thing you know, she's fighting for women's suffrage. So like, it's like, I think I'm doing all right. I could get through these next couple of weeks at work.
Yeah.
Things like that to just keep things in perspective is always nice. But outside of that, not much else going on in my life. How you been, A-Dub?
Well, you know, I was lazy last week, so I was mostly lazy in this week, but I did make it to the gym yesterday and just put in some real hard rounds. You know, that the new level of hooks I've unlocked, it's still crisp, it's still powerful. Like I'm finally learning follow through, which I know sounds incredibly silly and basic. But, you know, for a while, I was just about getting the pop, delivering the power. But now it's like, okay, now that I'm doing that automatically, it's just second nature. It's just like breathing. Now I can start to like carry that power through. And it's just like I'm turning my hooks a lot faster. Just that snap is just high pitch and crisp. It's so good. And yeah, man, just feeling stronger, feeling like my body's more harmonious, like my movement, my footwork is improving, staying solid. Like my legs feel more conditioned now. I keep track of my pace when I'm walking to and from the gym. It's like a 2 mile walk. And I cut 17 minute miles on the way there. And then I cut 16 minute miles on the way back, which is about the fastest I was walking back when I lost all the weight the first time. So I feel like my legs are back where they need to be. I should be strong enough to start like consistently jogging without causing any knee pain and probably even getting back into the jump rope, which is really just the one thing that I've been missing the most about my workouts. But my plan is to lock in, really go hard every day. Next week, get the last little bit of gristle off that I can before my birthday, so I can be looking nice. Hopefully, be wearing some more of my expanded wardrobe, because that would be a great gift to myself. Other than that, still, getting a little bit at a time through the Kojima book. Like I understand more the voice and the angle that he's going at. Like it's interesting. Like you aren't really gonna learn the ins and outs of gaming and like the secrets of his creativity, but he's giving you examples of his thought processes and like the things he looks for, the way he feels about him. And it's communicated through essays on other media that he's come into contact with and enjoyed throughout his life. And yeah, I'm really liking that perspective. It's like it doesn't remind me entirely of Tom Bissell's Extra Lives, but it's a similar kind of esoteric kind of thing where you can, if you get on the right wavelength, you can decipher and absorb the message that's being conveyed, the information that is within there, because there is a lot of info in there that you can digest and break down. So yeah, just noodling through that. I was watching the Is It Cake Halloween episodes, so that was cool. I haven't seen Is It Cake in a while. It's a delightfully silly show. They had some good celebrities on there, like Pete Holmes and Whitney Cummings and Chelsea Peretti and people from like The Bear and stuff like that. So
Yeah.
having
Pete
fun with
Holmes is
that.
perfect for a show like that, I can imagine.
Pete Holmes is perfect for everything. I love that man. He's one of my favorite comedians ever. That's a high bar to me. I love that dude. I gotta see him live one of these days. I'm thinking of going to the Comedy Store for my birthday. I think that'll be a nice little treat to myself, because it's like I've been wanting to get back into the cycle of consuming stand-up comedy. Like not a lot of specials have been coming out lately, and the ones that have been coming out are from more new comedians rather than, the big headliners and stuff that I'm used to seeing. And so, I want to go see some of the big boys again. And don't get me wrong, I love all the new talent. I love just the fresh takes and original ideas and perspectives that new comics bring to it. But I'd like to see the hits. But yeah, man.
It's also nice to see in the progression of certain comics, because like especially like with like
Yes.
Chris Rock, like you see like in his specials, like it's just like stuff like what he's talking about in one special to the next special, and then you see how his life has changed and is now influencing that perspective. And so it is nice to go on that journey with them as they go from special to special.
Yeah, you got to be in for the whole ride. You see it online. I'm trying to get better about not thinking about what people say about things online. But you see it online, people like, yeah, Dave Chappelle killed him softly. It was his best. It's been downhill ever since. And it's like even if that is the general takeaway, it's like, but you go along for the ride. It's not like he forgot how to tell jokes. It's just he got a different voice. He went to a different side of the content spectrum, and you go along for the ride. That's all I gotta say about that. Keeping up with anime, the new season of the last season of My Hero Academia has begun. It's two episodes deep, and they are both subtitled on Crunchyroll, which is killing my soul. So it's been 2 weeks now, and I have had zero My Hero, which is outrageous. But as soon as those dubs start trickling in, I'm back in it. You said it was the fall season. It's starting to cool down a little bit outside. We had a couple days of some sprinkling. You know me, I love me that rain. So I'm glad it's finally coming back. Hopefully we can get some hard, steady downpour at least once or twice before the hot seasons roll back around. But other than that, man, just chilling, moving forward, trying to stay consistent.
Gaming, I'm sure. So what you been gaming on, Adam?
What have I been gaming on? So the main one up front, of course, goes to Yote. Still working through it, about 40 hours in. I've only killed one member of the Yote Six, and you have to do that. That's the beginning of the game. And since then, like, it's just been dozens and dozens of hours going from literally wherever the wind takes me, because I'm just like, oh, let me check this out. Oh, I got some maps. Oh, I can go do this. I can get a bamboo strike, get another spirit. Oh, there's a fox. Let me go up here. Got a charm. Wait a minute. Go to town. Sell this. There's some bounties up. And let me go chase this guy down. Oh, this is a dope little storyline. Oh, this is a tough battle. Let me go back to this other thing that I left alone at the beginning of the game that I think I'm tough enough for. Got him. Got the armor. It's like I like how the map is smaller and more dense than Tsushima is, because it feels like no matter what direction you go in, no matter when you visit a particular region, there's always something to do, and it just takes you in different directions and different areas that you haven't explored, and the map just naturally fills itself in as you're knocking things off the checklist. You might run into some challenges that are a bit too tough early on, but you come back later, you have a different weapon set, you have a different armor that gives you different passive abilities, you use a different charm combination, you play a little tune before you go into battle. Get the wolf going, like that kind of stuff. So I'm having an absolute blast with it. The enemies are getting more challenging, which I'm thrilled about, because it's going to help me to tighten and hone my combat skills. I appreciate that after we watched the latest stream in the pre-show, you went back to one of the older streams, and I could see the difference not only in the enemies and their fighting style, but also in the way that I engage them and the way that I handle them. And like, we've both improved in that regard, which is necessary against each other enemies, because I mean, I'm using my tools, I'm using all my weapon sets, I'm fighting alongside a wolf. Like, it's the wildest yet most realistic kind of samurai experience that I played in a long time since Ghost of Tsushima. So having a blast with that, looking forward to pushing a bit more. It says I'm 33% of the way through the story. So I tried to knock off another member of the Yote Six, but I just ended up doing like two or three story missions. Like, I got to the guy, the Kitsune, the fox guy, and I guess it just wasn't the mission where you take him on, he gets away. It's just like, oh, I gotta get you later. All right, let's see how it is. Let's do more investigating. So yeah, I'm looking forward to pushing the story a bit more, taking down more of the big guys. Hopefully things evolve and change as my name grows more infamous among their organization. So I'm really looking forward to that. Just loving Yote, loving how tough it is on Lethal. I've been playing Lethal since the start. And every enemy you fight, like one or two hits, you're dead. So it makes it a bit odd and somewhat amusing to see people online talking about, oh, I ran into this one boss, like he one shot you with every attack. I'm like, a boss, like everything I'm
Like
fighting.
minions are taking me out with one shot.
Exactly. Taking you out one shot. Like, I saw a comment where someone suggested, like, oh, the enemy AI is stupid. They attack you one at a time and it's so basic. And I'm like, oh, you're clearly playing on one of the lower difficulties, because on Lethal, I know for a fact that like you'll engage with the enemy thinking that you're one on one. Another one will come up from the back and just shank you. Or you'll block a hit on one side, you'll see the guy coming to shank you from the other side. You'll block him, and then the guy that you left free will just slice your back open. Somebody will come from the side and just slice you in the back of the head. And somebody, it's always a man, it's just thinking about it, because there's so many quick little like just inside strikes that they do, where they'll take the wide traditional swings at you, but then like you'll block one and they'll follow it up with just a quick swing, and you're like, what? How did you get me with that? But yeah, I love it. I think if people think the game isn't challenging enough, if people think that the AI isn't smart enough, play on lethal. Let's see how your opinion changes. But another one that I've been playing this week, it was a suggestion from my brother. I had Absolum on my wish list because I really like the art style. I like the way that it moved when I was watching the trailers. It's a beat 'em up at its foundation, but it's in roguelike form. So, you're going on your runs, you're picking your different paths, you're navigating across these continents so that you can get to these bosses and liberate these towers that will then allow you to take on the final boss and free the land from their oppressive grip, as most games typically have it. And of course, you die, you go back to the beginning, you're reborn, but you have your permanent currencies that you can use to give you additional upgrades that make each successive run a bit easier for you. There's side quests and NPCs that you can encounter that you can add into your base camp that give you all kinds of different options that you can utilize. Like I got this one chick, and now there's this currency that I was stacking. And I was like, I have no idea what this is for. And then I finally got this chick in my camp, and she sells new combinations of the elemental powers that you acquire and level up that, enhance and alter your fighting styles. And that was a welcome addition. It solves the question of where I was wondering where the additional power was going to come from. It's gonna help us get to the later portions of the game. Like I felt up until the point that I found her, we had basically unlocked everything that we could up to that point, and it was just like, I don't understand how we're gonna get to the end with enough juice to do it. But then we found her. Now we have a whole new set of abilities that we can look for and upgrade, which is cool. And like with these abilities, like you go into a level, you find a pillar that's been taken by the bad guy. You liberate the pillar, and that opens up an elemental class that you can then encounter randomly as you're progressing through the game. So, like, you'll get the fire pillar, and then the water pillar, and then lightning, and then wind. And then, as you move a little further, you get earth. And there was one more. It was a weird one that I didn't anticipate. But yeah, I think there's about anywhere from 6 to 8 different kinds of elements that you can mix and match, and then they have interplay between them where certain skills or certain elements synergize. So there's power in that too. And you can get builds going on where you might have a water build where you're putting people in bubbles and they're taking additional impact damage when they're hitting the ground or hitting the wall. Or you can get a lightning build where once you build up enough charge, suddenly all your hits shoot chain lightning between the enemies. It's dope. Like you could get what is it, the wind power, where one of the skills is if you deflect, you get these sonic booms that automatically seek out enemies and put extra damage on them. And like I said, it's a beat 'em up at its core. The combat system and why I'm into it more than I've been into beat 'em ups in the past is because it has a dash that you can do in any direction, so that helps you avoid damage. And if you dash into an attack, it counts as a deflect. And what that does is that opens up the enemy for a punish attack that, does extra damage. So it moves as fast as I'm thinking. Like the combat is responsive, the hit detection is on point. It's like you never feel like the game is kind of gaming you the way that beat 'em ups in the olden days used to be, where it's like, oh, he was one pixel closer to me than I was, so his attack hits me, but mine doesn't, like that kind of stuff. That's why I wasn't into beat 'em ups. But this one is doing something for me. Like Absolum is doing for me what I feel Hades has done for most people with roguelikes. And it's cool. Like because of Absolum, I'm thinking a lot about going back to play Streets of Rage 4, which I was enjoying when I first tried it, but I never went back to it. However, playing Absolum, it's making me understand the beat 'em up world because it's communicated through that roguelite lens that I'm all about. I was playing with my brother, and we only played once, but we ended up playing until like 5 a.m. that night because we were just ransacking everything, having a blast, trying different characters, trying different builds, different combinations. You can get different special moves. Like, dude, AMC, there's this one character. He's a dwarf, but he has a gun. So he's beating everybody's ass with his fist. Like, he's running around picking up dudes, throwing them, just pounding them with his fist. But then you can hit the special button, just bow, bow. But then you, but the kicker, which is what just took it to the next level for me, is that you can get a class ability where you can turn your skill button into a reload. And that reload gives you back your magic charges, which you have to use to do your special moves. So normally you would charge that in combat by defeating enemies, but the dwarf, you can just press the button, he'll spin his gun, an empty shell will come out, he'll put a new one in, and you got your charges back. So I'm just unloading with this gun in every stage all the time. It's bah, bah, bah. Like, what? And then the reload, because he's spinning the gun, it also counts as an attack. So if you're just handling business, you got enemies in the corner on the side, and then you do the reload, you're still juggling them with the gun. You get the bullet in, you shoot them before they hit the ground. It's so much juggling, so much like bouncing enemies off the walls. And oh man, like, we're getting to the point where we're like, my brother will throw an enemy at me, and then I'll just juggle them and finish them off. Ah, so good. It's so good. I highly recommend Absolum. If you're a fan of beat 'em ups, if you're a roguelite fan, check out Absolum. It's an awesome little game. We made it pretty far. I think there's three continents. We've made it to the end of the second one. And we've set foot on the third one, but haven't really dug into it. But yeah, man, it's great. I highly recommend it. So check out Absolum if you get a chance. I'll try to put some streams up so people can see how your boy and E-Single are getting down. But AMC, what have you been playing?
Couple games this week, a dub. Let's start with Stardew Valley. Be quick there. Theo has been playing the shit out of that, and through him playing, because he's pretty much like he'll play a game and then watch the game on YouTube or watch YouTubers talk about the game and shit like that. So he's like well immersed in the world of Stardew Valley at this point. And so through his journey of watching videos on YouTube, he's picked up on secrets that Marissa and I aren't even aware of. And the other day he found this sword. It's called, like, we just seen in his inventory, it's called like the Meowmere sword. You were like, what the hell is that? Like, we played the game so many times, we've never come across a sword. And he's like, oh, like it's like a secret sword that they
Oh.
showed me in YouTube. And we're like, what? And then it's like this whole thing where you have to go, you have an ancient doll, which are these things you get in the game, and they're just artifacts, but they don't really serve a purpose other than sticking in the museum to fill like a slot. And so he went there with the ancient doll, and he goes to the mines, and it's like this lava area, and then he throws the ancient doll into the lava, which then kicks off this series of events where this bone dragon comes flying out of the lava and drops off a gem. And then through that, then you're supposed to figure out, you take this gem over to the wizard's place, you stick it on this mantle, and then out of nowhere, this portal appears, and this cat enters through the portal, throws the Meowmere sword at you into your inventory, and then takes off through the portal, and now you just have this sword. And we never would have figured this out if he hadn't watched this like YouTube video. And what
That
we learned is
sounds
like,
incredible.
yeah, it's absolutely awesome. And what was great too is that the Meowmere sword is a reference to a sword that's in Terraria. So just taking it back to like connecting the two worlds. So we love that much more. And I ended up now I'm next thing you know, I'm now getting the Meowmere sword. Have the sword on my farm. I'm absolutely loving it.
Stardew and Terraria made by the same developer?
No, different developers, but Stardew has a lot of reference. Like the creator of Stardew, Eric Baroni, or Concerned Ape, he has a He's a big gamer, and so there's a lot of references to other games within Stardew Valley, and so
That's
that, yeah, that
dope.
that just happened to be the Terraria reference, which was for a secret sword that I am absolutely, and when I kill enemies, they explode into rainbows. So it's great. It's great. Let's see. Other thing I've been playing, Overwatch 2. Won't say much there other than just running with Zenyatta. And man, I've been pretty much maining Zenyatta for a couple weeks now, and it's sticking. Like I've come across other characters at different times, like Ilari or Bridget or Brigitte and Juno at times, where like I'm like, oh yeah, I'm liking them, and then I'll kind of just fall off. And then Zenyatta was the one that I jumped back into maybe like 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I just had a great run, like the first session, and I kept coming back, and I just kept winning. And I noticed I'm like winning like almost all my matches except for one, except for like maybe one recently. But it's interesting because even when the enemy, so one of my fears with Zenyatta all the time, like from not f keeping me from playing with him, was his lack of escapability, and as I've said many times, his defense is his offense. And once I realized that and actually played with him and got good with, I guess my aim has just gotten a lot better as I played with other characters, because once I played with him, now my aim is on point, and so people try to run up on me, and it becomes a problem for them with that. Like, so every now and then there'll be a, what is it, a Tracer or a Sombra on the back line just trying to take me out, and they'll get the advantage every now and then, but I'll notice that my team is just pushing forward as they keep running that strategy. So I'm like, all right, just keep coming, because even with the deaths, I notice that I'm still leading on in heals for the team, and I'm getting kills, so I'm still being very much effective while they're going out of their way to try to pick me off without my team support. And through that, like I was just like, damn, like Zenyatta is just kicking ass. So I'm loving Zenyatta. I'm gonna keep pushing forward. Maybe something will come up, but as of right now, Zenyatta is just my dude, and I can't get enough of that support character.
What perks are you running with?
The first perk, I guess. Oh yeah, the minor perk. It's the one I run with is the ultimate, where it throws the Orb of Discord, so the higher damage
Yes.
one on all the enemies. So I've been running that, and then just like it's right when there's like it's going down, I'll just throw that ultimate on and try to like heal my team while getting in the enemy's like mix, so the team can then focus fire on them. So it's a way to like not only be purely defensive with that ultimate. So liking that, and then the other one is the double healing. So I get two healing orbs at like 70%. So it's supposed to be less, but I'm kicking ass because it's on two people, and it's like I can have it on like the tank, and then I'll throw it on like one of the DPS dudes, or I'll throw it on both DPS dudes, and then throw it on the support if I need to like keep them alive for a second. So it lets me like manage the battlefield a lot better, and so I'm really loving that build out right there. It's like it's whatever it is, I'm just getting a ton of heals, getting a ton of kills, and I'm not dying often. And so my perception of Zenyatta has like, I didn't have a bad perception of Zenyatta. It just wasn't my go-to support character, and now it's up there at the top with Lucio. So it's crazy, it's wild. So I can't wait. Eventually, when
What
Yuini's
skin you running
single,
with?
he's like a sushi guy. He looks like he's
You
like he
got
has some food.
the
Yeah, the yeah,
takoyaki?
exactly.
Oh, this
Yeah,
is the
so
one Zenyatta skin I want.
yeah, I've been running with that. So that it's my shit. I'm loving it. Other than that, I've been playing Zelda. Won't say more. There's not much more to say there, just loving exploration. What I really like about Zelda is it's a game that teaches you without having to like sit down and break down directions to you. Like all the time, like I went up to a sky island, and I noticed that there's these three separate islands that are all connected by rails. And then I see this cart, and I see a battery, and I see a fan. I've had the fans in the past, but I haven't had the battery. And so it's like, oh, okay, well, they gave me a battery, so clearly it's effective for what I need to do here to get around. And so I put it on the cart, I attach it to the cart, attach it to the fan, and I noticed that, so in the game, when you first start getting the devices, anytime you activate like a fan or any of like the motorized devices, you have a personal battery and it starts draining that battery as you use it. And you can upgrade that battery to last longer. But then I noticed that there's these external batteries now that I have come across out in the world. And if I attach those to the device, then it runs on that battery's power as opposed to my own personal battery. And it seems to be unlimited. And so it's
What?
yeah. And so through that, like it's I can now make like I've made like an airship, where like I yeah like it was like this platform that floats in the air, like they introduces you to earlier on in the game. But then while on one of the sky islands, I see this platform and it has these what is it called, like hot air balloons attached to it with like the flames. And so I'm like, oh, okay. And then there's like some fans off to the side of it. But then I also noticed in that area they had a bunch of batteries, which I said like I'm just starting to get introduced to. So then I start attaching the battery to like the fans and to like the flames for the hot air balloon. And so I'm just setting them off. It just takes me up as high as I need to be, and then I activate the fan and it just pushes me around the map. And then I can just take the fan and just put it on like any one of the corners to kind of like give myself a direction. Or I have multiple fans, so I just strike certain fans to head in a certain direction and deactivate other
Yes.
ones. And so through that I'm just flying around the map now in this like this makeshift airship. So it's great. It feels almost like steampunk, but it's definitely not steampunk. It has batteries and shit, but it feels makeshifty from that perspective. And yeah, it's I haven't played a game that's really like tapped into my imagination in this way since like I guess since Breath of the Wild, but really like they took it to another level with like the creator mechanics from your ability standpoint when it comes to Tears of the Kingdom. And yeah, this game is absolute shit. But that's all I got there. Let's take a break, A-Dub, and we will come back with our first topic of the week.
Topic of the
Of the
week.
week. We are back, A-Dub. You break us off with that first topic of the week.
Topic of the week. We're going to start on a high note. Start with a little feel-good story. Start with a little something to look forward to. This is coming by way of IGN, Rebecca Valentine reporting. Claire Obscure Expedition 33 is getting a free update featuring a new dungeon, enemies, bosses, and costumes. So let's see here. Claire Obscure Expedition 33 has officially sold 5 million copies since launch, and developer Sandfall Interactive is celebrating by teasing an upcoming free update that will include a new dungeon, enemies, bosses, and more. Sandfall said the update was currently in development for all platforms, but failed to specify when we might see it. We hope the update we're working on will act as a thank you to those fans for their support. Please be patient while our team works hard on bringing you something worth the wait. This was stated by creative director, I can't pronounce that name, the creative director over at Sandfall Interactive. So if you can pronounce it, feel free to send me a terse message. I sound it out. Let me see. Claire Obscure Expedition 33 free update contents. Bullet points are as follows: a new playable environment taking the characters of Expedition 33 to a brand new location with new enemy encounters and surprises to discover. Challenging new boss battles for late game players to overcome. So Claire Obscure got some more in game. Okay. New costumes for each member of the expedition, giving even more customization options for players throughout their adventure. New text in UI game localizations into Czech, Ukrainian, Latin American, Spanish, AMC, Turkish, Vietnamese, Thai, and Indonesian, bringing the total number of supported languages to 19, plus even more surprises fans can look forward to. AMC. They also released an image suggesting what fans could look forward to. See, they failed to reveal further details about what sort of story the new update might tell, but it did share a single image that offers a few clues. And it's an image of a lot of, high quality visual stuff, but it looks like a child's room. It's got like an Esquire doll laying on the ground. It's got a railroad set, blocks stacked up, books, like the colored xylophone that children usually have, and just all kinds of kid stuff, blocks, cars, candy, an a storybook featured prominently in the foreground with what looks like someone holding a sword riding on Esquire's back. It doesn't look like any of the expedition members, so it'll be interesting to see how that fleshes out in the game. Personally, I still need to go back to Expedition 33 to finish it off, which I fully intend on doing. It's an outstanding game. I made it to Act 3, and then the deluge of new releases just yanked my attention away. But yeah, I'm looking forward to going back and playing it. AMC, I know you've expressed interest. Is this update sweetening the deal for you?
Of course. I love it. I'm glad that they're doing that as a, I mean, it does work out, as I mentioned to you in the when we first saw this story, that it does happen to rightly coincide right around Game of the Year discussion. So it's a way to remind people, oh, just in case you might have forgot, we're still here and we're still bringing the heat. So that was great. Also, in a way, because they're doing it for free, it's not like, hey, we're back and give us some more money. It's, hey, we're back and we got some new content. Enjoy that. And yeah, just remember our game while you're at it. So I think it's awesome. It's another way to one, reinvigorate people coming back to the game, and then to get some end of the year sales. I'm sure there'll be some Game of the Year sales right around the Game Awards too. So it's a it'll be it feels like it's you'll be getting that complete edition when the time comes. So I'm looking forward to it. I love jumping into a game and it already has like all that content ready and available when I hop in for my first time. So this is definitely sweetening the pot for me. How about yourself, A-Dubs? Is this something to get you back into the game?
I mean, the game itself was already enough to get me back into it. Like I said, I really want to push it over the finish line. It's nice to know that maybe by the time I do go back to it, there'll be even more there for me to explore and enjoy. It's always nice when the games that you like expand and improve. So I'm a big supporter of that. And back on that sketch I told you about, IGN provides a little more detail there. Without getting too into spoiler territory, the image depicts a child's playroom and has a child sketch of what seems to be Verso riding atop Esquire. Verso is one of the members of the expedition. I won't say much more than that because it is super spoilery. But yeah, okay, so we know that's him. They say if you've beaten the game or even just gotten to Act 3, you probably have a bit more clarity about what this is teasing. But suffice to say, this new content may give us a bit more detail on Verso and Esquire's history together and what they were up to during Verso's childhood. Pretty dope. But AMC, you got the next topic of the week. Topic of
Topic
the
of the
week.
week. We'll see how this timing goes, but it's kind of a double topic because we got, I was about to say NPD, we got Circana's best top selling games in the United States for the month of August. So let's get right into this. So the number one game, well, we got a lot of new games on this list. It's right around fall, August. We got a lot of sports games coming out, so that's always going to be near the top. But also at this point, we got a lot of heavy hitters coming in, so you're just going to see a lot more spending, and we got a ton of that. So the best-selling game for the month of August in the United States was NBA 2K26. This is somewhat of a surprise because this is also a debut month for Madden. Madden NFL 26 started at number two, so it debuted at number two for the month. So this is something notable here is that Madden shows up in multiple collections on this list. And so Madden was really the top selling game of the month. It was just the way that the way EA decided to sell Madden separately and in packages, it breaks up the unit sales. But Madden NFL 26 at number two. Then at number three, we got another new game, Mafia: The Old Country. So nice to see Mafia selling well up there with NBA and Madden. Then there's number four, we have Metal Gear Solid Delta, Snake Eater. So another new game, another new old game, but a new game debuting at number four. Number five, we have EA Sports College Football 26. So this debuted at number one last month and it got knocked down to five because we just have a ton of new games. Number six, we got another new game, A-Dub, another new old game, that being Gears of War Reloaded. So debuting at number six, people bought it, people played it. Number seven, Donkey Kong Bonanza. Number eight, EA Sports MVP Bundle. So that's where Madden also shows up. It was in the MVP bundle. And then it also shows up in this bundle at number nine, EA Sports Kickoff Bundle. So Madden is also here as well.
So
So,
Madden is on the top 10 three times
yeah, exactly.
in its debut month.
Yeah. let's see. Number 10, we have Demon Slayer. I'm not going to read the rest of that. Chronicles 2. 11, Always Selling, Minecraft, 12, Call of Duty Black Ops 6, GTA 5, just always there.
Still there.
Helldivers 2 at 14, Forza Horizon 5 at 15, Grounded 2 at 16, WWE 2K25, 17, Hogwarts Legacy 18, got another new game at 19, that being Story of Seasons Grand Bazaar, don't know what that is, and 20, Red Dead Redemption 2, always
Wow.
selling. Yeah. Let's see the top selling games of the year so far. Number one, still holding it down, Monster Hunter Wilds. Number two, EA Sports College Football 26. Three, Elder Scrolls 4, Oblivion Remastered, still holding it down. Four, Call of Duty Black Ops 6. Five, new games. So, in its debut month, NBA 2K26 debuted at number five. Number six, MLB The Show 25. Seven, Elden Ring Night Reign. Eight, WWE 2K25. Nine, Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. And 10, Madden NFL 26 in its debut month, which you can imagine it would be a lot higher if they didn't have all the bundles because the esports MVP bundle is at 13. And I don't see the other one, but yeah, it'd be a lot. It'd be a lot higher on this list if it was all just one game, but that's all right. Things selling, things doing well. We have some notes here. As far as content goes, August video game content spending increased by 11% when compared to a year ago at 4.2 billion. The growth was partially driven by a 21% jump in content spending. So that's great. People out buying games, aided by a shift of NBA 2K26 to August from September a year ago. So NBA 2K26 or 2K series typically launches in September, and they bumped it up to August this year, which led to a bump in sales for the month of August. Hardware is also doing well, A-Dub, at least for Nintendo. Monthly hardware spending increased by 32% when compared to a year ago. Nintendo Switch 2 sales were able to offset double-digit percentage declines across each of PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series S and the OG Switch. Hardware, with 2.4 units sold life to date over its first 3 months on the market, Nintendo Switch 2 is now 5% ahead of the previous record-setting pace of the PlayStation 4, which had 2.2 million units during 3 months ending in January 2014. So Nintendo Switch selling well. That this could also be an indicator as to why Nintendo has increased the price of everything except for the Switch 2 at this point. They're seeing the momentum and they want to ride that momentum in sales, and so they're not touching that. They're not chasing the greed, A-Dub, to kill their momentum. Let's see, hardware, continuing. Nintendo Switch 2 unit sales are trending 77% ahead of the time-aligned sales of the original Nintendo Switch. And year-to-date
Damn.
video game, yeah, just killing it. Year-to-date video game hardware spending has grown 20% versus a year ago, reaching 2.9 billion. Unit sales are up 6.5% year-on-year, with the average selling price increased by 12.3%. So, console is going up in sales, but we're seeing an overall growth in hardware spending. And let's see, we got some subscription stuff. Year-to-date spending on non-mobile video game subscription services is now 19% higher when compared to a year ago. So subscription spending year over year is up. And then for the month of August, there was a growth of 25% in subscription spending at 0.5 billion. Year to date spending is now 20% higher, okay, than a year ago. Yeah, all right, so that's that. But I wanted to roll this into some comments by Matt Piscitella outside of the overall spending for the month. He also Circana had a survey poll about people's spending habits when it comes to gamers, and some interesting things here that I feel like would be interesting discussion topics. So we'll do the first one. So The headline here being, so I pulled this from, I think, Video Games Chronicles. The headline here being, more than 60% of U.S. game players only buy two games or fewer a year, according to a
Wow.
Circana survey. So market research company Circana's senior director, Matt Piscitella, shared data from its Q3 2025 Future of Video Games survey, specifically its data on purchasing frequency among players in the U.S. According to the data, 18% of players in the United States buy a new video game about once every 6 months, while 12% buy one about once a year. The survey
Wow. So
also found
72% of gamers are buying less than two games or less a year.
So the survey also found that 33% of players buy a new game less than once per year, meaning
Oh.
so they have it at 63% of players buy two games or fewer a year.
Oh, okay.
So you know what, we'll stop right there. So A-Dub, is this shocking to you at all that I guess 63% of gamers only buy about two games a year?
Considering the amount of people that get in discussions talking about games they haven't played, it kind of doesn't surprise me at
The
all.
zero reviews.
Yeah, the zero reviews, the people who just have an axe to grind against the developer or the IP or whatever it's tied into. It's whoever has money in it. Oh. It's all something. And then you also have to consider when it comes to games in the trophy data, where it says that less than 50% of people finish games. Wow. I'm gonna have to think about that a lot because that just paints this picture. And then you also mentioned that subscription spending is up. So it seems like people are getting subscriptions or people just don't play that many games. And then I'm also reminded of the data where it was like, I think Xbox players play like, ha spend like 7 hours or something a month or a week playing about half a dozen games, while PlayStation players spend more hours on fewer games or something to that degree. Damn. It's an interesting picture that all of that information points to. I really wish I was able to articulate what I think that could mean. That's
Yeah, I mean, it
surprising
definitely.
information, but it's a clear trend.
Yeah, and you could see where like the connection with Game Pass and the increase in price, and seeing if they're seeing the majority of gamers, the majority being 62%, only buy two games a year, odds are one of those games is Call of Duty. So if you think about it, they're like, we're giving up. And there was like, when that happened, there were all these reports about like, quote, like people saying like, oh, this is how much Microsoft is giving up by having of like this is how much millions Microsoft is giving up by having Call of Duty and Game Pass. And so with the price increase, you can kind of see like that maybe they saw that drop off as well. Like, oh, that this was the one game people were buying when we had, especially when we had it outside of Game Pass. And now when it was part of Game Pass, you see the subscription spending is going up, and maybe Call of Duty then becomes, if that was going to be one of the two games that people were going to buy a year, maybe they've chosen to buy something else other than Call of Duty. And so then you see Microsoft like pushing people to either to buy Call of Duty or you're going to be paying more for Game Pass moving forward. So you could see how that data feeds into maybe some of the decisions of the companies and how they are attacking, you know, pricing of games and subscription services. But there is more here. So this is super interesting. So commenting on the findings, Piscitella suggested that those 14% of players who buy one game or more per month are mainly responsible for the continued trajectory of full price games. So this is his comment. Hyper enthusiast, price insensitive players are really keeping things going, especially in the non-free-to-play gaming space. Continuing, been talking about this trend for years when it comes to game spending. Why are there premium game pads, $149 collector's editions, pro consoles, and general rising prices? Because the price insensitive affluent players
Affluent.
are the ones doing more of the spending as everyone else shifts to free to play. So I guess they're A-Dub, like the, you know, the putting out the versions of the games that come out, 4 days in advance for a higher price, putting out the pro consoles, all of that is targeting the enthusiast gamers, and that's why the companies continue to do that. And so I guess I would consider you to be one of those affluent enthusiast
This
gamers.
is news to me, but I'll wear
So is
it.
how do you feel that the companies are basically creating this content for you? Not necessarily like we're gonna put out a game 4 days in advance, so ADEV will spend $100 on it, but the collector's editions, the pro consoles, like they're putting them out there because they know that that's something that you would most likely end up buying. How does that make you feel, ADEV?
Well, it feels like it validates the feelings that I've had over the years about the people who are spending money on games and spending money on hardware and being early adopters and showing up on day one and making sure they buy a game new and not being afraid to buy a game because it's digital or always online or whatever other hot button issue you could raise. It's like the people spending the money are the people keeping the industry as it is, like as much as what we knew the industry to be is keeping that alive. And I also kind of appreciate how the free-to-play games have sort of weeded out the dedicated paying customers from the people who just want to like dip in and dip out at their leisure and, save money, or maybe they're just into free-to-play games. But, it's, man. I enjoy that there's still a market for me, that companies are still marketing products and services toward me to suit my needs, because you hear it all the time, people forecasting the doom and gloom of, oh, these are the last consoles and consoles are going away and physical games are going away. There's no games preservations, all the doom and gloom about the progress as well as the erosion of the traditional gaming space. But I feel like it'll be proportional to whatever that paying audience is. So as long as there are enthusiasts, as long as there are people who are willing to pay the cost of admission for the hobby, then there will always be that core of the hobby by which all the new stuff and everything else everyone else enjoys is supported on. So it's a bit enriching. I'm gonna have to reevaluate my feelings about how large different segments of the gaming community are, because if it's really 14% that are spending that steady, consistent month-to-month money, then that raises the question of how many people within that are the vocally negative type. Is that coming from just the people on the outside who aren't spending the money? Like, what's the overlap? And so, yeah, this presents some new perspective and just more stuff to consider. I mean, how about yourself?
Yeah, there's a couple things there. It points out kind of the double-edged sword of maybe some of the choices of the companies, when especially the reactions from gamers, because people will complain about the mid-gen refresh, but the people that are complaining are the people that would typically fall into that enthusiast category, or people who play multiple games like a month, or at least one, like a new game every month. Like, it's like you think about how many podcasts I listen to are talk about being the like very consumer friendly, and they'll talk about like the price of the PS5 Pro, like, oh, it's so expensive, but yet they all have PS5 Pros by the time they're done discussing it.
Having them like shipped and delivered while they're recording.
Yeah, and so you see how like the kind of the disconnect, at least from the perception of some of the enthusiast gamers, how they'll talk about being man of the people, when in fact they're the people who are kind of like that are buying the collector's editions and buying the pro controllers and buying all that stuff. Like, they're the reasons why there's all these premium products out there. And it's also too the same thing with like games being $80 and whatnot. It's like the people who are willing to pay for it are the reasons why they'll continue to put those out for those prices. So you can't say that there isn't a demand for it, or they wouldn't keep like putting this stuff out. The other side of it too is it does also show the fragmentation, as you were kind of discussing earlier, of the gaming community, and how the, sorry, my kid's going crazy, how the console makers have to feed both sides of it, because it's like, one, you want to feed the enthusiasts, the people who are constantly talking about video games and kind of complaining about some of the practices of the companies, while they're also, let me pause this real quick. Okay, back. You know what? I just realized she's fake crying. She's pretending to be a baby right now. So we're just gonna have to push through that. So
That's
anyways,
hilarious.
yeah. Yeah. Anyways, like, yeah, they have to feed both sides. So they're feeding enthusiasts, but also you see that there's a majority of the people are free to play gaming and in buying one or two games every month. So that's where you then see like Sony being like, well, if the majority of the people are playing free to play games, then we need to put out a free to play game that's going to connect with them so that we don't underserve that market as well. Because if the majority of people are there, and likely what that's also saying is that they're spending their money there in the Fortnites and all those other Overwatches and games like that, well, then we want it. There's a reason that there is a financial incentive to want to be in that market as well. And two, it the other thing I would say is when the enthusiasts are saying that, like, why are you making these games? Nobody wants to play these games. It's, I beg to differ. Actually, the majority of the people are playing these games. And so you kind of have to acknowledge the fact that people are playing those games, and that it's not just the games that the enthusiasts are playing, that there's so many free-to-play games out there that people just overlook. Like, we always joke about it, but we'll be like World of Tanks, like 9, like, or whatever is out there.
Payday three.
Yeah, Warframe. Yeah, Payday. We got whatever that game is that everybody was saying copied Zelda's art style. People playing that. Yeah, yeah, there's just so much going on that people don't acknowledge that does make up a lot of the gaming industry. And so the companies have to figure out a way of pleasing the people who are most vocal, which make up the smallest amount, but also spend a ton when it comes to content. And then also the people who are totally within the ecosystem, but aren't necessarily buying a bunch of full price games, but they are spending money. It's just they're in the free to play realm as opposed to buying a bunch of new games and jumping from game to game. So it's interesting to see how the industry navigates all of that. But I mean, that's all I got there. Do you have anything else to comment on that, or we could take a break and move on to the next topic?
Yeah, I got a lot to mull over when it comes to
Yeah.
all that information, because that when you have it just laid out so specifically, and
Yeah.
it's not exactly what you expect. Like that takes some reevaluation.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a break and we'll come back with the next topic of the week.
Topic of the
The
week.
week. All right. We are back. Naomi started real crying. I guess something happened, and so now she's done fake crying because
She
things got serious, I guess.
probably hurt herself fake crying.
Yeah, fucking
I
around. But hey,
love
Dom,
kids, man.
awesome. Yeah, the next topic of the week.
Topic of the week. We're gonna get a little somber here on control
Yeah.
issues for this next topic of the week. Tom Phillips from IGN reporting. Assassin's Creed, set during post-Civil War period, canceled last year due to increasing concerns over U.S. political climate. Let's see. Ubisoft allegedly scrapped early plans for an Assassin's Creed game set during the U.S. post-Civil War period, a report has claimed, with the decision made primarily due to anxieties surrounding the country's current political climate. Gamefile reported on the previously unknown project's cancellation and stated that Ubisoft ultimately decided to walk away from its plans in July of 2024 amid increasing political tensions in the US and after a strong backlash to the reveal of Assassin's Creed Shadows co-protagonist Yasuke, a historical black samurai. The unnamed project was also planned to feature a black protagonist, a former slave from the South who would join the assassins and fight the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah.
Clan. While still in the concept phase, early work had been greenlit by Ubisoft bosses in Paris and was underway at Assassin's Creed Shadows development studio Ubisoft Quebec, which previously also led work on the ancient Greek set Odyssey and Victorian London-based Syndicate. Set during the US Reconstruction period, the game's story would naturally have dealt with issues such as the rights of former black slaves, racial violence, and fallout from the assassination of US President Abraham Lincoln. Several flashback sequences were also planned to be set during the Civil War itself. Word of the decision filtered through the company last summer, just days after the attempted assassination of Trump in Pennsylvania, though was not directly connected to this event, the report states. Sources told Gamefile that the idea behind the game had been to show how racial tensions can be used to control society. Instead, in a source's words, Ubisoft ultimately decided the project was too political in a country too unstable. More generally, the cancellation came amid a turbulent time for Ubisoft, which, aside from the delayed but successful launch of Assassin's Creed Shadows, has otherwise suffered a number of high-profile flops, layoffs, studio closures, and game cancellations. AMC, so allegedly, Ubisoft has scrapped plans for an Assassin's Creed set in the post-Civil War, black
It's canceled
protagonists fighting the Klan. How do you feel about this information?
I mean, a part of me is upset because it sounds like a great story. Because it would be awesome. Post-Civil War, Black Assassin, and like different from Yasuke. So it would be dope. But at the same time, I kind of agree with them. And from the perspective that, like we saw with Assassin's Creed Shadows and just other games in general, that once they get in the eye of certain people, there are active campaigns to not buy a game, which is like insane to think. Like people are like, do not, I'm not supporting this. The people who complain about cancel shit are the people who are like, I'm there wherever they get a moment to get on a mic and talk about it. They talk about how they're not going to buy something or support this trash. And so I can totally see from their standpoint, maybe you do Shadows, you take a break, you do something else that's a little more like palatable for a general audience, and then you do like the controversial one. And so maybe it was canceled from the fact that hey, people reacted to Yasuke in this way, we can't also show up and then do another one of these right away. But it is upsetting, and people would have reacted, I would say that, because like, so I read this book on like Reconstruction by W.B. Du Bois, the god, and he was just breaking down like everything that was going on post-Civil War. And so you have this period of one Reconstruction where you have freed slaves, and the government tried to do right by them, giving them like representation and whatnot in the South. And then you see the Southerners of a certain pigment have an issue with that,
Of a
and
certain
because
cloth.
yeah exactly, and they have an issue with that because I mean from their perspective they lost all this power, like they were, because they were fighting for the most horrendous reason of causes, and but they ultimately lost all this political power, effective right after Civil War, because Lincoln and the North, they weren't going to just hand the government right back over to the people that tried to secede. So they tried to basically like, you know what, we're going to put people in who are loyal to the Union, and we're going to try to rebuild from there. And then slowly over time, they gave power back to the people who are in control of the South, pre-Civil War. And that's when you see Jim Crow and all that bullshit. But that also covers then a lot of systemic racism that people don't want to accept, having issues, having effects on some of today's issues. And so you're going to be getting to a lot of systemic racism, which is considered like somehow like a woke history when you're pointing out like a lot of the issues. And so I could see that being very something that's very inflammatory to cover, especially for a company that's been already deemed to have a certain perspective when it comes to that. And so they were never going to get a fair shake. It was going to be a game that's going to be highly scrutinized. And so if anything, you put out another Assassin's Creed, and assuming that like our election terms don't change, by the time you get to the next one, we should have a new president that isn't fucking insane,
Jesus.
and suing companies and whatnot that go against any of the rhetoric that he's trying to push. And so it does make sense. You put out something else, and then we'll be past the 4 year mark of this term, and to by the time you can announce your next Assassin's Creed game that might be in a better climate and a more receptive climate. So I totally understand the decision. It's upsetting because I would have wanted this game, but hopefully we still get it eventually down the line. That's like it's one of those things we talked about in the pre-show. A-Dub has made the point with Sonic that they put out the ugly Sonic intentionally in order to get the backlash and the discussion going, and then so that they could put out the good Sonic and everybody be happy with the Sonic movie moving forward. And we've seen that speculation with other decisions from other companies, and I could see this being one of those things that, like, if enough people come out and say we would have wanted a Civil War Assassin's Creed, well, down the line they do announce that and it becomes a fan-friendly decision. So I can live with this choice as long as it's still a consideration down the line. How about yourself, A-Dub? How do you feel about this?
I mean, I think it is, it, I don't want to say convenient. I just think it pretty odd that this happened over a year ago, and for some reason, this detailed information is surfacing now. Like, why? What is the point of letting people know this? You know, Ubisoft is constantly in the news in a negative light. Like, voluntarily releasing this information wouldn't be helpful. Somebody leaking it, it's just as a means to do harm to the company, or perhaps like that. That's what makes the whole Sonic theory kind of come into prominence here. Because it could very well be like the Assassin's Creed Shadow situation, where people had just been begging for it for years, and then Ubisoft finally decided to break the glass on that, you know, when times are getting rough. And now they're, you know, it could easily be a testing of the waters, but assuming no backroom shenanigans on this, and this is just a legit story, then I don't know, man. It's, on the one hand, it is a sensible decision because perhaps people just aren't ready for that kind of product yet.
Sweet
And
baby.
that, I mean, that is not sweet baby, whatever. But, you know, just people being ready for it is a reasonable concern. So I respect the decision in that light. At the same token, though, it's like art and messages and meaning, sometimes you gotta just throw it in the fire and see what happens, because it's, you know, you gotta challenge people. You gotta hold up a mirror to people. You have, if you have those ideas and you have the platform to convey them, like, sometimes it's more important to make the statement regardless of the consequences than to not make the statement and kind of and just stand idle on the sidelines about a situation where you could, you know, put up that mirror. So I don't know. I'm of a mixed position here, because, you know, I get it just in the sense of, why do that to yourself? Why put yourself through that? Especially after the way people reacted to Yasuke and how they, you know, tried to boycott the game and, you know, tried to smear
We need to see the
the image of the
numbers.
game. Yeah, need
The
to see the
game's not
numbers.
selling.
Still begging for sales number. Prove us right. Yeah, I forgot all about that, man. But yeah, it's, you just went through all that. You're gonna not only line up for it a second time, but you really wanted this. Like, this was just about a black dude being in Japan way back when. Like, this is about the actual, like, tension between African Americans and the country that has decided that they will call it home. So, you know, personally, I would have loved it, or at least I would have loved to see what that could have been like, how they could have made that entertaining while also respecting history. I mean, they seem to be able to thread that line pretty well. I was a big fan of AC Shadows. And yeah, man, I think, you know, we probably lost something pretty cool, and it's sad when you have games like Wolfenstein, you have games like what is that? Is it Mafia 3? I want to say, yeah, that have touched on and broached this subject. And I understand that the climate is different. People are incredibly sensitive and incredibly hungry to find just the next effigy to burn at the next pitchfork meeting. But yeah, man. And overall, I think, nice save, but you could have knocked it out the park. That's my summary.
If anything, too, what I would say, with your point, is that there's a segment of people who are critical of Ubisoft who would have respected this decision more. And so you kind of just, by doing the safe thing, you continue to be the same old Ubisoft in a way. Whereas if you're trying to win, build back your reputation and win over some fans, you could at least know that there is going to be a seg like the segment of people who were somewhat who are critical of somewhat critical of woke and DEI and all that bullshit were also defending Yasuke as a human being and the choice to put him in this video game. And so there is a segment of people who I think may be critical of Ubisoft who also would have respected this choice because it would have been something that they would have liked to play through. And so yeah, by playing it safe, you end up continuing just kind of same as same old, and that isn't necessarily what you want right now when you're trying to build back the reputation of your company.
Well, we don't have the only opinions on this topic. Some other folks got some input.
Come on.
So let's check it out. We got Troll of the Week,
Week,
Troll of the
troll of the
Week,
week,
Troll of the
troll of the
Week,
week,
Troll of the
troll of the
Week,
week,
Troll
week,
of the
week,
Week, Week, Week, Week, Week, Week, Week, Week. Now resize the text, resize the text. Yeah, so Troll of the Week. Coming sideways at Ubisoft, so
Ubi scrub.
what's new there? But they got some choice words for the company over this decision. First troll says, "Coward corporate bastards." Next troll says they wanted to find another excuse to shoehorn in a black character where it didn't belong, and new fans would be mad yet again, so they canceled it.
Shoehorn.
How do you shoehorn a black character where they don't belong in a post-Civil War America in a story about a former slave against the KKK? Did you read anything? He just saw like Ubisoft canceled. It was like they did it again. They're too weak and read nothing else. Next show says, "Wait, being against the KKK is too political? I guess I need to add Ubisoft to the list of bootlicker companies I will no longer purchase from."
Remember when what is it? Machine Games, when they put out Wolfenstein 2, and the slogan was, "It feels good to punch a Nazi," and that became controversial because people identified with
Yeah.
the
You shouldn't advocate for
Nazis.
violence against people. Oh man, we gotta pay history teachers a lot more, man. And like, I would see this more sharply toward like a US developer that shied away from the idea because they understand the tone and the texture of the country and our civility in order to be able to navigate that decision more tastefully. But Ubisoft is a French company, and when you're dealing with some of the darker themes and events of American history, like it wasn't that long ago, and the ripple effects are still here. Like there are still people who have experiences that are just direct trickle-down effects of slavery in the Civil War. So
Jim Crow, all that.
And this would be a situation where a sweet baby would come in and try to help the French company, who probably doesn't know how to tastefully depict that, to navigate that in the best manner, like they did with Remedy writing for Saga in Alan Wake 2. So bootlicker company. They're a foreign company. They don't have a full grasp of how we get down over here. So sometimes you just have to get out of the way. And that's what they did. Next troll says, no one would have played it till it was $14. And even then, no one was completing the bloated mess of their games to even hear what social commentary they added. This is one of those people that listens to podcasts and other music while they play games. And then they hear stuff like this, like, get your politics out of my games. It's like, you don't listen to anything, do you? Last troll. I'm sure it would have been another revisionist tone deaf slog like everything Ubisoft touches. Historical fiction, man. It's in the disclaimer before the game. Historical fiction. It's not revisionist. They're giving you the big stuff, the touchstones, and fudging the details to make it fun and entertaining for you because you like to complain about stuff. So I don't know. I mean, I get people who would be against this decision. There are lots of people who have voiced that they would enjoy this kind of game. I would count myself among them. I'm on the side where I totally understand. It sucks, and it is kind of a bitch move in a way to just stand on the sideline, and that's a big missed opportunity in my opinion. But I respect the decision. So sometimes it's just not worth it to start trouble and to start a mess that you can save yourself from. If it's just like, yeah, well, we'll just do something else this time, maybe. And like we were talking about, it doesn't mean it's gone forever. It's like they could revisit it. They could take a bit more time and figure out how to, address it more tastefully. America might get its shit together and, get adults back at the get the adults back at the table and stop letting the kids cook Thanksgiving or something like that. So, just give it time. We'll see what happens. At least people know that it was or is on the table, and people can continue to voice their interest or disinterest or what have you. And we'll see what Ubi does in the future. But for now, games get canceled all the time. It's a bit strange to me that this one gets so much attention just because of what it's about. I don't know. I'll have to think that out a bit more. AMC, take it
I got nothing there. Let's go to the next topic of the week. Topic of the Oh wait, troll of the week. Troll of the
Troll
week.
of the
Troll of
week. Troll of the week.
the week. All right, yeah.
I was waiting to interject.
Next topic of the week. Topic of the week. Let's see. This is I just found this interesting because we play PvP games, and we've kind of come across people trying to circumvent this, and so I want to get your thoughts on this. So, with a story by GamesRadar, Activision finally gives in and confirms Call of Duty Black Ops 7 will not use skill-based matchmaking. At launch, open matchmaking with minimal skill consideration will be
Oof.
the default. So let's see. With pressure from Battlefield 6 being put on this year, scrutiny towards Call of Duty is at an all-time high as we head to Black Ops 7's release. Activision has been taking steps to counter what ex-Blizzard boss and regular shit talker, I added that in, Mike Ybarra, predicts will be a boot stomp from EA shooter, such as introducing a free trial of Black Ops 6 alongside Battlefield's release. Just a side note, Mike Ybarra, like whenever Microsoft makes like some type of misstep like that, he's like the
Here
first
he
person to tweet.
goes.
So let's continue. This pressure has also prompted Treyarch to hit the panic button and finally heed fan requests to remove skill-based matchmaking during the Call of Duty Black Ops 7 beta view via not view via a new playlist. As announced on Twitter, Treyarch said at launch, open matchmaking with minimal consideration will be the default matchmaking in Black Ops 7. Our team is committed to providing players with a more varied experience, and the beta was a valuable opportunity to test this approach. I took the further steps, A-Dub. I actually Googled skill-based matchmaking to see the pros and cons of the feature. And just to set this up, we play Overwatch, and we've noticed some Smurf accounts, I think, trying to circumvent the skill-based matchmaking. And so let's get into the pros. So the pros of skill-based matchmaking for less skilled players creates more balanced games with a higher win percentage and a greater chance of success, which can improve their experience and encourage them to keep playing. Also, in the pros, for all players, aims to create a fair and engaging experience by reducing the likelihood of one-sided blowout matches. So far as the cons of skill-based matchmaking, for highly skilled players, can result in a constant stream of difficult matches, making it hard to have relaxed and casual games. Also, as far as, yeah, and with cons of skill-based matchmaking, player retention. Some critics worry that consistently difficult matches could cause both highly skilled and less skilled players to quit the game over time, ultimately shrinking the player pool because all the matches are difficult, A-Dub. So, A-Dub, what do you think about Activision's or Treyarch's choice to do away with skill-based matchmaking
Who does
at the
that
behest of its
benefit?
players?
Who
It
does that?
benefits the experienced players who want to go in and curb stomp the casuals.
That's the only outcome I can see. It's skill-based matchmaking is always like complained about, but then when there's no skill-based matchmaking and the big guys are stomping on all the little guys and people are like, where's it needs better matchmaking? It's like it had it. You told them not to put it in there. But I mean, I'm a fan of it. Yeah, all the matches are tough. It's a competitive game. Like it's I'm of the camp that these games are not meant for casual experiences. These are not meant for you to get on and relax and unwind in, unless you're just like a god MC with it and you're smashing on everybody. Sure, relax all you want. But when it comes to the people who have no intention of actually getting good in the game, who have no intention of focusing and paying full attention to it, who have no intention of trying to win, trying to achieve victory, then it's not the game for you. Play something else, play some single player stuff. And skill-based matchmaking makes it so that you get consistent quality matches. I mean, that's just my, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm coming from the wrong side of this, but I feel like skill-based matchmaking is the way to go. You get good, you get hot, you go up, and then you meet some people who are a little hotter than you. You go back down, and you just keep moving up and down until you settle at your level, and you get just a consistently good games with good people who want to be there and perform consistently. So I don't know if you want to be casual about it and not have skill-based matchmaking, or excuse me, if you want to be casual about it, go to a make a private game, make a private lobby or something. Like use the tools that are being provided instead of forcing this laissez-faire kind of attitude on everybody. Like I don't want to get on a game and there's always just some dude who's god tier smashing on everybody because I'm not god tier and I'm not going to get god tier by getting smashed on by a god tier player. I'm going to get god tier by incrementally working my way up to that level or just finding a level where I settle on and I can keep having fun where I'm at. If I want to relax, I'll play something different. I mean, that's just where I'm coming from. Maybe I'm being closed-minded. Maybe I'm being an asshole about it. How do you feel about it, AMC?
No, I'm kind of on the same page because it's the other flip side of it is no skill-based matchmaking. It said it's trying to avoid one-sided matches, which that means there's a good chance that you might be the guy, the experienced player who's on a team of a bunch of noobs, and you're just
But I
getting
don't
worked. Yeah,
want
exactly. And that's the point. It's like the people who are complaining about it, you could still end up in that situation with or without skill-based matchmaking. Like the only thing that this kind of gets them is, and you could see it, the incentive to be like, I want to be a streamer, But in order to be a good streamer, I got to be dominating. And so I want to be out here just dominating folks and showing my viewers my extreme prowess, my excessive prowess in like in this video game. And so I see those people getting upset because they get in and it's just a difficult match. And then maybe you got people in your comments on your Twitch stream being like, "Ah, you suck, dude. Why you dying?" Like
Why
that.
yeah.
Why you dying? So yeah, that and then that leads to them creating Smurf accounts, and then they're like, "Oh, come to my God stream as I dominate these people and show you how good I am at this game."
The zero
But
to hero run from a new character to grandmaster or top
yeah,
500.
exactly. And like it kind of like it brings me back to like what you said, incremental. Like I think about it like working out, like with a weight, where you get a weight and you find the right weight and you work out with it, and eventually you get used to it and you're just hitting those reps a little too easy. And it's like, all right, I gotta step up. You step up to that weight and it's like, oh shit, I gotta lighten the reps. I gotta get control. I gotta get used to the weight, like to the weight of this. And eventually you get used to it, and then you're back to your normal reps, and eventually you get used to that, and you incrementally just keeps like moving up. And that's how it should go. It's like you start at one point. You get good at that point, and then you move up to the next point, and it keeps going like that. And I know it's not a fast like trajectory of just shooting up the ranks, but it is an incremental way to push up the ranks. And I get it, because when you get to that, I think the worry with some people is you get to that cusp where you're going to move up to the next tier, like say from gold to diamond, and then it just gets super difficult before you can jump over to diamond. And so people get upset at that, but that is, I guess, part of the process, and that's why it's there to begin with. And so I personally enjoy it. Like I always look at, especially now with Overwatch, once they added in the hero levels, once I get on my team, I'll quickly just scan the rest of my team and see like, all right, where's everybody at? Where's the weakest or like the newest player at? Yeah, and then so then you can kind of observe how they're playing, but also you never know with the Smurfs. They might be like the weakest dude level wise, might be the best player on your team if they're a Smurf account, the occasional Smurf account. But it is a good way to see the trajectory, and it's usually pretty evenly balanced, and I enjoy that because it will be a difficult match. But as I said, I'm playing with Zenyatta, and I'm just getting a ton of wins because we tough it out. There are plenty of times where it'll start out rough. And then we find our footing midway through, and then we just start curb stomping the other team. And that's why I think like some people are just too quick to just quit matches, because the moment that they come up against any type of adversity, it's, oh, my team sucks, I need to get out of here. Where it's you're finding your chemistry, and you have to wait for that chemistry to kind of find its right connection, and then out of nowhere, then the team just starts working like a well-oiled machine. So I think the skill-based matchmaking, I'm sure there are faults that like I don't know about if you really look into like the algorithm and how it does it. But overall, I think that it is there for a reason, so that there's nothing worse than being on the wrong side of a one-sided match. We're just like, oh, like nobody knows what they're doing here, and everybody's out for themselves, and there just seems to be no cohesion going on with this team. So yeah, I prefer to be with the experienced players, the people who should be less inclined to quit because they know what they're doing, and they're gonna try to tough through it. So yeah, it's if anything, I would want it to make sure, like if you're like I like that Blizzard with Overwatch. It's like if somebody quits, it's like, hey, you're gonna be put into this other pool of players who quit until you can prove that you're not gonna just quit every time there's some type of difficulty or challenge in a match. So I think certain things acknowledging some of that behavior and working that into the algorithm is, I think, a good thing. And so, who knows? I'm sure the experienced players are going to applaud this. And obviously, they had to do this because Battlefield 6 is making all the fan-friendly decisions. But I hopefully Overwatch just continues doing what they're doing, because I actually am appreciating what I'm getting right now from what they have to offer. That's all I got there. Oh yeah, sorry.
let people have their free for all. Let's see who sticks around. Let's see who's still enjoying the game when there's no skill-based matchmaking. It's like, oh, you used to be at 50% win rate. Now you're at 10. I'm at 90.
Yeah. Oh
Yeah.
man.
Like all the woes of competitive multiplayer games are made more severe with a lack of skill-based matchmaking, in my opinion. But whatever, I might be wrong. Let's see how the community responds, how people adapt.
Do you have any quick hits, or do you want to call it a day?
I got one quick hit
Yes.
that I'm very excited about, and you might be as well. Wesley Yen Poole at IGN reports Bethesda announces Fallout Day broadcast for October 23rd. But are any megatons planned? Bethesda has announced a showcase for its annual Fallout Day on October 23rd. October 23rd, 2077 is, of course, the day in the Fallout timeline the bombs fell, sparking the Great War that caused the irradiated wasteland fans of the franchise have been playing in over the past few decades. The Fallout Day broadcast will stream live on October 23rd at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, with the Fallout for Hope post-show following immediately after. In a statement, Bethesda said fans can expect the latest news about our existing Fallout games, community celebrations, and upcoming fan events. Let me see. No specific mention of news about upcoming games, but fans are already wondering what the company might have Fallout related up its sleeve. There are all sorts of rumors floating around about potential Fallout remakes now that The Elder Scrolls Oblivion Remastered is out the door. Fallout 3 Remastered was leaked back in 23, but those plans may have changed. And we know Bethesda plans to eventually get to Fallout 5, albeit after The Elder Scrolls 6. Perhaps it's more likely that we'll get further updates on Fallout 76, which just announced the upcoming Burning Springs update and the addition of the ghoul from Prime Video's Fallout TV show, featuring the likeness and voice work from Walton Goggins himself, It's also worth noting that season two of Fallout, which is set in New Vegas, is due out this December, so maybe we'll get a new trailer or images. AMC, I know you're into Fallout like your boy over here, so you're gonna be tuning in to Fallout Day.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be. Yeah, I definitely want to know what they have to offer because it would be dope if they announced like some type of remaster. Hell, if they even just brought back like top-down Fallout for like the Switch and like PlayStation, and like we just got to play that again, like bring that back in some form, that would be awesome. So yeah, I'm all here for any type of remaster, possible remake. We know obviously Bethesda themselves, they're focused on Elder Scrolls, but it doesn't mean like another support studio or even in Obsidian might have something to offer. I mean, Obsidian seems like they have like a million shit going on, so who knows? Like if they really could squeeze in like a New Vegas or whatever. But yeah, it would be great if we get some type of announcement outside of 76. But I am happy that they are still supporting 76 because people didn't want that, but then when they were jonesing for some new Fallout stuff, we got some Fallout 76 updates that people were more than happy to jump into that content for.
Guess who was there for you when you needed
Yeah.
them?
Yeah, exactly. And like, we got like what, season two coming. So they need some new content out there to coincide with season two. And so yeah, it makes sense that they would have some type of announcements here for new Fallout content coming and hopefully shortly in the near future. Any expectations for you or hopes personally for you?
I mean, of course, you hope that there's a game to be announced, but I'm looking at it from about a just a small step back. And as much as people want like the next mainline Fallout entry, as much as people want a Fallout 3 remake, and they're like laser focused on any news for those specific two items, there's plenty of room for Bethesda, Obsidian, or even a third party studio yet to be named to have been working on something a bit more smaller scale for Fallout. Like, what if it, I think it wouldn't take them very long to do remakes or remasters of the original two Fallouts and,
Yes.
bring those over to console. I don't want to say for the first time, but I can't recall any time when those were available on console. Could easily be updated quality of life features, make it the keypad binding fix whatever issues were in the game, up-res the visuals,
That turn base? The
and
tactical turn base? Isometric Fallout? Oh my gosh.
and then you'd expose all these new and enthusiastic Fallout fans to a different style of Fallout,
Give that
then
to Obsidian. Oh my gosh.
yeah,
They are
all
the ones on
day.
Wasteland. Yeah.
Already did. Yeah, they know what they're doing over at Obsidian, and it's God, it's just the biggest money play ever. Just sitting right there, like just get Obsidian on a Fallout project. They love to have multiple projects in the pipeline. They love to turn projects around at reasonable paces. They love to release major titles, or they love to make multiple releases in a year, we've come to discover. So there's a huge opportunity there. As much as I would love a Fallout 3 remake, as much as I would love any information on Fallout 5, I think all the elements are in place and ripe for just a smaller yet quality, like dense kind of Fallout offering to just come out of nowhere. It's like, just satiate people for a little bit longer until we can get to the main events. So that's what I'm feeling. And we'll see what's going on. I will be tuning in. Me and AMC will absolutely be catching up on the show that week so that we can talk about it here with you guys.
Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
This is Zayda. We are Control Issues. Thanks for playing.
Sucker.
Control Issues!